day, everyone. This is the Ontolock Invited Speaker Presentation. I'm Peter Yim, one of the co-conveners of Ontolock Forum, and we have the pleasure of having Mr. Aldo Gangjami and Dr. Valentina Brizzuti joining us today. They will be speaking on the subject of pattern-based ontology design. Aldo, as most of you know him, is a very familiar name in our community since he started with us back in 2006 and actively participated in the Upper Ontology Summit as one of the stewards of a public upper ontology. And he has graduated in philosophy and then worked in medical informatics, knowledge engineering, and semantic technologies, including the semantic web. He is a senior researcher at the CNR Institute of Cognitive Science and Technology in Rome and heads the newly formed Semantic Technology Lab. He also co-founded the Laboratory of Applied Ontology, as most of us know. He has published more than 100 refereed articles in proceedings of international conferences, journals, and books, and he has been involved in several projects funded by the European Union, governmental organizations, and industrial companies. And Dr. Valentina Brizzuti received her PhD in computer science from the University of Bologna in Italy. And currently, she is also a researcher at the Semantic Technology Lab in Rome. She is one of the key researchers in the EU-funded project NEON and IKS, and she started the Ontology Design Patterns.org initiative, which is actively, and she actively participates as one of the editors in chief. She has published in international journals, conferences, workshops on topics such as semantic web and ontology design. So without further ado, I will hand the session over to Aldo and Valentina. And in the meantime, if everyone would bring up their slides, we will start from there. So, Aldo.
Okay. Thanks, Peter, for the excellent introduction. Thanks to all for attending. So I'm starting from slide one with the title, and just to mention that this project is carried out by our recently founded Semantic Technology Lab in at Rome CNR, and within the context of the project NEON, that is an acronym for Networked Ontologies, which is an integrated project of European Union, that is now running at the end of year three and has built in the NEON Toolkit, which is a platform that supports basic functionalities, and also there are plugins that support more specific things concerning reasoning or diagnosing ontologies, but also supporting the design. What we present in this talk is related to the work we are doing in NEON and in other projects, and there will be a specific component on NEON that will come out in in a few months that will support the kind of design that we are describing in this talk. So slide two, the talk is organized, you can see the outline. First I will talk briefly about designing computational ontologies, and then about ontology design patterns in general. And then Valentina will describe the ontologydesignpatterns.org initiative that is now being published. This is one of the first public events in which we want to describe this initiative and ask people for joining it. So slide three. And we start with the basic assumptions that we share about ontologies in the context of our approach to their design. The first one is that ontologies are considered as components, as software components, and it's more or less widespread now in the semantic web area. They are components expressed and managed in standard WGC languages like RDF, OWL, and now the RIF, and of course also created by using Sparkle or visualized through Fresnel lenses and so on. By the way, the design of these components is a core aspect, and quality can be easily associated with good design. There is a work concerning our approach to quality that goes back to 2004 and was presented in a European Semantic Web Conference, and there is a large report that's about a formal framework for ontology evaluation and selection. Next slide, slide 4. This quality has, was described as having three quality dimensions, so the structural side, the content side, and sustainability side of an ontology. And the content was, of course, the primary dimension because ontologies are supposed to encode the content for some reason. And content was analyzed as spanning through three different aspects, which are the coverage, the task, and the capacity of being self-explanatory. By the way, task was considered just after this work as the immediately measurable aspect. In this case, for example, quality is not maximal and abstract, but can be bound to context. And also you can describe partial orders of problems that could be, for example, encoded by means of competency questions. And, of course, also possible reusable solutions, at least when such solutions consist in models in ontologies. And also you can also describe good practices related to the task. It's also have a grasp on the historical aspects of developing solutions. And then also all this can be described by having empirical methods for its evaluation, kind of measurability. Next slide, 5. So what is ontology design in general? Again, we assume that computational ontologies are then components, then artifacts. They can have a structure that can be, by the way, can be layered. So you can have a structure at the linguistical level, the logical layer, and annotation level, and so on. By the way, as all artifacts, their function is to, they have a function. And the particular function of ontology is to encode a description of the world. And this world, by the way, can be, you know, actual, possible, counterfactual, impossible, desired. Because if we take the assumption that ontologies are task-oriented, firstly, and are made for some purpose, in principle, you can even want to talk about non-actual, non-real things. Okay? This is a very, you know, tolerant approach with respect to what ontologies should encode. Next slide, 6. Then ontologies must match both domain and task. So as a matching domain, they allow the description of entities whose attributes and relations are concerned because of some purpose. For example, social events and agents as entities that are considered in a legal case, or research topics as entities that are dealt with by a project worked on by academic staff and can be topic of documents and so on and so far. And on the other hand, they should serve a purpose or a task. For example, finding entities that are considered in the same legal case, or finding people that work on the same topic, or trying to match project topics to competencies of some staff, or also to time left or to available resources, and so on. Slide 7, next one. Ontologies as artifacts have a life cycle, so they are created, evaluated, fixed, and exploited. And their life cycle has some original characteristics, by the way. This is something we have studied at the very beginning of the NEON project and tried to understand the overall spectrum of you know, of design actions and design activities. And regarding so specific data or the kind of projects that are carried out or the workflows or what kind of argumentation structures are supported or are actually run, and design solutions, and also interaction aspects. So in the next slide, the eighth one, we can see a diagram that tries to summarize briefly and partly this idea of having design activities organized by means of different aspects and different entities. Actually, in the year one of Neon, we also defined an ontology for describing ontology design activities. It's kind of meta model of that. Now there is also a light version of this ontology. There should be a urine slide, otherwise I will forward it later. By the way, the idea here is that tools, components, and interaction aspects can refer to different components of design, so it can refer to data, and so you can have ways of accessing the data or searching for the data, like, you know, in search engine semantics and search engines like Watson or Syndice. Or you can have tools for supporting the execution of an ontology project, or for supporting collaborative workflows or procedures, or like collaborative protege, or supporting argumentation sessions like the Cicero plugin and the Neon toolkit, or also there can be tools and interaction user interfaces that are able to support efficiently and sometimes adaptively design actions and design solutions. And our portal is situated in the context of this last set of components. So we will see in particular something that relates to the data and the solutions that can be retrieved in order to make the, you know, good decisions or good actions with reference to the particular task an ontology project is about. So next slide, 9. ontology-related data, okay, just to sum up, we have a lot, okay, and it's not just about having, you know, just discussing logical structures, but you can have, you know, having a wide range from informal to formal, going from text corpora to taxonomies, lexica, on so-called knowledge organization systems, and database schemas, or data sets in linking open data, or also ontologies and all the possible data that you want to reuse for the sake of encoding ontologies or supporting some task in your project. Now, next slide, 10. Now we have this lot of data in kind of a web souk. You can imagine the web as consisting of a lot of different documents and resources, types of resources, and also the semantic data that can contained on the web have shared this kind of heterogeneity. So we can have data, semantic data coming out from mashups or data sets in linking open data, but all the DBpedia, Freebase, or also data coming from triplification protocols for accessing semantic data embedded into HTML, or data that are converted from some knowledge organization systems like in SCOS. And also we can have, you know, corporate terminologies, what we have seen. So all this data, next slide, 11, can be transformed in RDF or even OWL, like in the Triplify initiative. Data sets extracted from heterogeneous sources can now be linked, and so you can have relations in even in direct, many ways. Of course, the semantics here depends on the intended task of data relation used for linking. And finally, you can search and visualize RDF data or make integrating applications. So next slide, 12. These are two examples, two screenshots from two typical semantic search engines, which are Syndice and Watson. They do different things. So Syndice is more on broad coverage. Watson is more on trying to look into specific structure of the ontologies and how to reuse these ontologies, the element of these ontologies in an ontology project. So it's tailored to reuse rather than to browse the RDF data. Both of the screenshots show the search for the term desire in the two different semantic search engines. Next slide, 13. we can see another way of searching for data. You have here the Open Link Data Explorer that tries to make an integrated knowledge search on DBpedia, possibly the related vocabularies and data that are linked to it. This is it's very, very good, although it shows you know, the heterogeneity of this, of the results of these linkings over these data sets. So next slide, 14, we have Freebase that tries to organize and also to have a community effort to improve the quality of these data sets. So next slide, 15. Now we have all those data expressed in a language that allows semantic interoperability. So next slide, 16. What we can do now that we DAO, for example. So maybe we can check the consistency, classify and query all this knowledge, and this is great, but when I locally reuse parts of such a big bunch of knowledge, inferences sometimes produce strange results, as a lot of you probably know. So a web page can be the same as an email address, or a person can be the same as a Wikipedia article, and you can even infer that Italy is a continent, because Italy is considered a tight country, and somewhere there is an RTF triple that says country is a subclass of continent. So these problems are happily fixable on a large scale. And notice that logical consistency is not the main problem, because AltaML can be wrongly used and still we have consistency. So why AUL is not enough? Let's see next 17 slides. So do we have clear-cut criteria on when to use AUL, individual, class, object property, data property? So modeling something as one of these data types can be quite arbitrary. For example, next slide, 18, in the Semantic Web Interest Group, there was a post some months ago in which there was participant Zile Hum asking for if there is any criteria for having, a decision on or a repository of typical tasks that can be support standard activities, he calls them. For example, search resort or book hotel. And so, depending on what you want to do with this, what you want to support, what service you want to support with your application, you may want to model this search resort or book hotel very differently. For example, if you want a functionality for searching resorts, implemented in a web service, you may want to have search resort as an individual of a type functionality. But if you want to search resort as a type of functionality required for this kind of services, you may want to have it as a class, and then you can have different individuals of search resort as functionality. But you can even have it as an object property. For example, if you want to support the task of who has been searching for what results in our web service, or even as a data type. For example, suppose I want to, I have this task for the ontology, how many users have been using our resort searching functionality? In this case, you may want to have a data type property search resort with range Boolean. So next slide, 19. So what are the possible solutions? So if AUL is not enough for building a good ontology, we cannot ask web users either to learn logic or to study ontology design. What can we do? So reusable solutions are described in our approach as ontology design patterns, which help reducing, on one hand, arbitrariness, but also without, on the other hand, asking for sophisticated skills. Of course, all this provided that tools are built for any user, for possibly adaptively, but in general for being accessible by people that don't have to study all these things. So let's go next slide, 20. An ontology designer's world. So this is just it's kind of a summary of what I already said with some examples. So when we start making ontology design, we have requirements. We have like, I want to attend my ideal talk, or logical constructs like a different subclass of our restriction. We can have existing ontologies or informal knowledge resources, conventions and practices there that can span from naming or how to make a URI for the semantic web, or how to convert XML to AUL, or how to use SCOS, or how to make a disjoint covering, or how to reify some complex construct, or how to make a transitive relation, and so on. And we can have a lot of tools, okay? I've just mentioned here some of them. Next slide, 21. And the web design ontology will obey to some capital questions at this point. So, the consequences of the assumptions that we've made. So, what are we talking about? Why do we want to talk about it? Where to find reusable knowledge? And finally, also, do we have the resources to maintain it? This is sometimes quite important, especially if you have a large organization or department that wants to really maintain ontology across time. So all these what's, why, and the worst constitute the problem space of an ontology project, and designers need to find solutions from a solution space. And by the way, matching problems to solution is not trivial. So let's see 22, move to the second part of the talk, specifically on design patterns. So 23, ontology design pattern is a very dryly defined as a successful reusable solution to a recurrent modeling problem. Next slide, 24. And what is pattern-based design? It's the activity of searching, selecting, and composing different patterns. And these patterns can be very different. Can be addressing logical problems, or reasoning, or architectural, or naming, or re-engineering aspects, or content aspects, which are the ones that we have focused more currently. A common framework also to understand modeling choices, the solution space, with reference to task and domain-oriented requirements. And later Valentina will show, will describe the portal that started supporting this way of imagining design of ontology. Next slide, 25. We also call this pattern-based design as extreme design, because there are some commonalities with extreme programming. So let's go on. Next slide, 26. So we have here a taxonomy of ontology design patterns that have been partly summarized two slides before. So content, structural, architectural, reasoning, so on. We will see some examples. And we also distinguish between ontological resources that are not ontology patterns and ontology design anti-patterns. So bad practice, essentially. It is very important and sometimes. And some of the activity related to collecting design anti-patterns is, for example, already sometimes supported even at the component base, for example, in the work of University of Manchester by our rector's group. Let's go on in slide 27. So, here we see some examples. A presentation pattern typically addresses aspects of how to put their names, URIs, and similar things. So this is could be considered sometimes quite trivial, but it's also quite important because, for example, when you call a class with a name like areas, this is, can be considered bad practice because then an instance of this class is usually a single area and not a collection of areas. If you say areas in the name of the class, probably you may want to talk about collections of areas. Sometimes also there are recommendations like, for example, you can include the name of a parent class as a suffix of the class name. So, for example, marine area can be a subclass of area. These are all real cases taken from ontologies may currently being developed at FAO of United Nations. We is a partner in the NEON project, and we are collaborating with FAO for producing good ontologies for their use cases. Okay, so next slide, 28, we have an example from, this is not very, you know, at least from our perspective, not very, very investigated example of design patterns, but of course these are very investigated in areas like description logic, for example. By the way, just even in more pragmatic context, you can imagine that you can mix different styles of reasoning, different or reasoning patterns, like going from classification, subsumption, or inheritance, which are typically description logic reasoner tasks, but also, you know, materializing in like in inverse relations or transitive relations, but also putting there things like the anonymizing anonymous classes or individuals, or making also even approximate reason there, or even some workflow of them. For example, Tobray Composer, which is a very good tool for ontology editing, supports this kind of workflow, and this is actually one very useful functionality. So next, slide 29, is an example of a schema engineering pattern. In this case, you can move from a typical knowledge organization system to SCOS, which is a vocabulary recommended by W3C for moving this, for example, Thesauri to an A box in AOL, for example. So next, slide 30, we have examples of mapping patterns that are also called correspondence patterns. We are making joint work in this initiative related to design with other people coming also from different projects, different institutions, and Valentina will report about a meeting that will be this month on the 23rd in Rome, just to start new areas in the portal for this. For example, in this case, correspondence patterns, there is François Scharf from Berry that is doing work on that, so describing not only the relations that are well known about, you know, like equivalent or contained or overlap between classes, but also being logically heterogeneous. For example, when you may want to map like physical person as a class in one ontology to physical person role as an individual in another ontology, what happens in terms of, it's not everything already well known in terms of the possible mappings you can produce. We also consider an additional semantic relation that we use for extracting patterns from content patterns from ontologies called cloned from. By the way, let's move. Next one, 31st. This is an example of a logical macro. This was introduced, for example, by Danny Brand, the teacher of the University of Karlsruhe some years ago. It's a kind of logical pattern that allows to create macros of constructs that are typically used in certain contexts. For example, here, this macro with an upside-down triangle puts together two axioms, like exist an R and for all R, for concept C as a filler of the restriction. It's a combination of, essentially, now of all values from and all some values from. This is very, very often used in realistic design in real cases. Next slide, 32. This is another example, quite well known, produced by W3C, Semantic Web Best Practices and Deployment Working Group in 2006. It's the Henry relation. This is another name for a quite well known pattern that allows to reify relations that can have an arity that is not compatible for a language that has a limited expressivity, for example. And in this case, and there is the next slide, 33, there is also an example. You can have an example. This here, you have a relation that is having given an exam by a student on a topic at some grade, can be expressed by binary relation. Then you can create a class and then create binary projections of the relation, one for each of the arguments of the binary relation. So, as grade for the grade, involved student for the student, on topic for the topic, update for even date of the exam. So now let's move to the next 34. We move to an area that we have studied more, and this is the one that is currently mainly supported in the portal, is the area of content ontology design patterns. So let's move to 35. So we know reusing ontology is not completely trivial. There are not many studies or even many ontologies that we know being really reused. Sometimes the effort of reusing ontologies is larger than building them from scratch, and this is really an issue. So we wanted to address this problem, and this partly was started with this working group of WDC that I already cited, and contemporarily there are in the references, you find at the end of the slides, there are many works that tell some story about what happened. But in particular in the UNIO project, this reusability is being increasingly supported. So from the lessons we've learned, we envision now small ontologies with explicit documentation of design rationales and best engineering practices. And these components should be supported by specific functionalities like selection, matching, composition, etc. And this should be implemented in repositories, catalogs, open discussion, evaluation forum, and in new generation ontology design tools like the ones that we are building right now. So let's move to the 37, next slide. Content patterns encode conceptual rather than logical design patterns. Let's try to explain a bit more. While logical patterns typically solve design problems independently of particular conceptualization, content patterns solve design problems for the domain classes and properties that populate an ontology. Therefore, they address content problems. On the other hand, you can also see content patterns as instantiations of logical patterns or compositions of them. Hence, they have an explicit, you know, non-logical vocabulary for a domain of interest. On the other hand, this is, you know, it's because of these patterns are related to, you know, design patterns that have been invented by Christopher Alexander, who is an architect and mathematician, in the 70s, and then used extensively in software engineering. You know, concentrating too much on the real semantic foundations of these patterns, we've tried at several two or three times. We've tried to found a very, very basic foundational structure for this content pattern. And every time we found that, after all, pragmatic criteria were always more important than this basic foundation, although, of course, some excerpts of them can be devised. And indeed, one point is that, for example, you may want to consider content patterns also at the meta level, like logical patterns. It's not completely foolish to do that. And indeed, there is at least one study that we are making with collaboration with the University of Rome on trying to make them at the meta level. And this is also closer to what, for example, Peter Clark suggested with his knowledge patterns years ago. I will come back to them later. So, content patterns are, they can solve modeling problems. So, for example, you can have, you know, modeling problems can have two components, some domain and requirements. The same domain can have many requirements. Like, for example, you can have different scenarios in a clinical information context. But same requirement can be found in different domains. For example, different domains with the same scenario, including expert finding, okay, as an application task. A typical way of capturing requirements is by means of competency questions, as from the work in the mid-90s by Michael Gruninger. So let's move to slide 39. And let's go a bit back also on the idea of content and knowledge patterns by Peter Clark. We have a lot of slides, so I don't think we'll spend a lot of time here, but just to introduce it. So the idea of Peter Clark was that a pattern is a theory template. So it denotes a structure that is invariant under signature transformation, so under some kind of morphisms. And pattern validity, the application is then left to some subjective decision. But the interesting thing is that you can, you know, for example, specialize the signature that is provided in one specific pattern. For example, the one used as an example is that if a consumer is connected to a producer, then it is supplied. So if you move it to, if a light is connected to a battery, then it is powered. So as you can see, the form and the logical form is exactly the same. But then, let's move to slide 40. You can even take this example of Peter's and represent it as in OWL, for example, in which, by the way, to represent it, you need some unusual construct for average OWL users, because you have to make a subclass of an anonymous class to a class. By the way, if you try to generalize over it and just to remove the signature, the vocabulary from it, you get to a logical pattern, actually. So you don't restrict anymore it. So what's the difference between what is logical, what has some signature, some vocabulary there? So the suggestion of Peter is that maybe you have to use it analogically, not just, not specializing it. And that's why he suggested to have even a category theoretical approach for supporting and reasoning on such knowledge patterns. By the way, this is the discussion. If you want, this is partly still an open issue, although, of course, we have some ideas on how to put together this analogy idea of morphisms in knowledge patterns, bipedals, and the more pragmatical aspect of our patterns that we are describing here. So next slide is 41. We have, of course, some formal characteristics of, at least for owl, of content patterns. So we assume that they have, they support some ontology morphisms. For example, you can have B in a part of, I see here there is an error because it's duplicate. We have put two slides at that. So move directly to 42 and ignore 41 because it was from a past version. So 42 is there. Okay. They are considered mostly as graphs of classes and properties, and they should be self-connected to items like surplus of, equivalent of, domain, range, disjoint from. For example, you can have that component is an object property with domain system. Okay, so this is very simple, okay? Not very complicated pattern in this. But if you want to talk about components of a system, you can reuse this. And usually, these can be applied to downward subsumption of at least one ontology element. For example, you can have a pattern like being a part of something that sometime, sorry for the very, you know, these examples are very basic, but at least we can understand and control them for the talk. And you can specialize, for example, part to components and something to system. And also, you can specialize component to section and system to law. And then you can have kind of a partial order of these patterns. Or you can also have composition. So you can compose being a section in a law at some time with being expressed in a legal text. Finally, from the formal side, we notice that usually there is an underlying N-ary relation, sometimes even polymorphic. For example, you can have a component with some system entity time, and but also you can have components with open set of arguments, so system, entity, time, maybe function, maybe place, person. Okay, now 43, we can have quite long set indeed. We have found of pragmatic characteristics of content patterns, so we are not going here to spend much time here, but there are longer versions of this list. So I'll try to be as short as possible. So first one is that content patterns are domain independent. So they are expressed by means of entity-level signature, no logical vocabulary. And they cover requirements. So they obey some. They try to satisfy certain comprehensive questions, for example, or use cases. So they solve domain modeling problems. And they have a typical maximum size. So here there is a possible link to the blinking effect that is also recently there was a book quite popular on the subject that describes that typically experts work with limited size of problem solving know-how and all that. And so patterns should also try to cover these. I have found several, many times in projects that I made with domain experts that they typically have these small dense areas of knowledge and reasoning by which they can very quickly understand what they are going to do and how. So other aspects are, there are components that should be at least minimally relevant from the reasoning point of view. So they should allow some form of inference, even some minimal axiomatization. So an isolated class should be considered as possible content pattern. And also be components should be cognitively relevant. So they catch relevant core notions of a domain and related expertise, as the one that I was referring to with the requirement covering. And also, sometimes you can consider them as linguistic relevant components. So there are interesting analogies between what the content pattern is and how they can match typically linguistic frames, like those in VerbNet or FrameNet. And then, these are just some examples. So these patterns can go from partial participation, very general, to more specific like plan or legal norm or sales order, so or a research topic or legal contract or medical guideline, or you can even have a pattern like the top of the gene ontology, or you can discuss situation of time intervals. Okay. Some of these examples, together with others, are already on the portal. Would be briefly described later. Okay, next slide, 44, it's about the fact that patterns can be paired to ontology requirements. So genetic ontology requirements are use cases, genetic use cases that nicely match genetic patterns and that you can specialize to a typical competency question in the domain. So this is a technique that we are using, for example, to make questions to experts, even when they are not provided directly competency questions. So they can start from generic questions and trying to specialize them in their domain. So 45, the next one. So this is about the fact that there is a tool now for supporting the presentation, at least for these content patterns, but we are now designing new parts of this portal for other types of patterns, but Valentina will talk about that. So 46, this is an example of how they are supported, are presented on the portal. This is the example of a very simple pattern, agent roles, so how to describe that agents can have some roles. And there is an annotation schema that is kind of a meta model for describing the intent, domains covered, typical competency questions, where to find the OWL file for the content pattern, what are the possible consequences. So, for example, the pros and cons, what you can do with agent role. I can express that some agent has a role, of course, but suppose that what you cannot do also is also important that can be described here. For example, that if I have a role at some time, this cannot be expressed by using this content pattern, then you need something else. And there can be a reference to that. And also, you know, you can refer to examples or to the where you have extracted a certain pattern from. So, for example, we have done a kind of re-engineering work, refactoring work from Dolce ontology. We have extracted several patterns from there. And the interesting thing is that in a real project, when you start from the real questions, the real competency questions, you can start using very easily the part of Dolce that can be important for designing your ontology. And these are very well accepted by experts, while it is much less acceptable for them to import all Dolce into their ontology project that could be, for example, a project that requires just four classes and a few properties. So next slide, 47. And an example of instantiation of such patterns. So a content pattern this way can be instantiated. So this is the way we are also supporting and going to support with the Neon Toolkit plugin for pattern-based design, combination of patterns and their use for encoding knowledge also in terms of templates. So another example, it's 48, is a time interval here, a time interval can be represented as having a start date and an end date. So this is typically usable for time intervals that can should be expressed with start and end. As you can see, all the elements that are defined for this pattern are visualized in the portal. So this is also an example of how the portal works. So Valentina will tell more about that. But the interesting thing, anyway, that I can anticipate is that you can you can design a pattern or extract it from somewhere, put it you can annotate it by using this annotation schema, and then you can upload it directly on the portal, and the portal will allow you to visualize it in this way. So, next slide, 49, as an example of part, I think we can skip this is a transitive part. Quite obvious, it's related also to the pattern produced in the semantic web best practice and deployment working group. And another example for slide 50 is about, you know, how to express, you can express that someone participates in an event, but suppose that I want to say that I participate in this talk today at 8 o'clock 6 p.m. Central European time, I want to also to express that there is some time or even some place and so on. So in this case, this pattern allows to represent participation that is time indexed. Of course, these patterns are very general, but there can be also more specific ones. This one, for example, is has been developed with legal experts for a basic expression of crime. So crime, especially for civil law, you have that crime is a legal case, that is a legal fact, kind of situation. So here you have, you know, the partial order of the patterns, because you can reuse another one about situations, but also that a crime depends not only on the description of a legal fact, but also on the fact that there exists some incriminating norm that can make this a crime. So next example is about the FAO case in the Neon Toolkit. It's about the observation of aquatic resources. So typically experts that want to make an observation here want to say that a certain aquatic resource has a certain abundance or has an exploitation rate or state. And these are very important things that should be taken all together. So an observation means that I have a resource for which I'm observing its location and its status and the time of the observation and so on. So next, 53, we'll see some example of matching competency patterns to competency questions. 54 is an example for a local problem. So a local problem can be expressed in different ways. There can be use cases, scenarios, use requirements, local competency questions, and etc. For example, you can have a specification like Red Hot Chili Peppers recorded the Stadium Arcadium album during 2005, and this can be transformed into local competency questions like, when did Red Hot Chili Peppers record the Stadium Arcadium album, or which albums did Red Hot Chili Peppers record during 2005? The point is that local competency questions are not usually at the same level of generality as the competency questions of the patterns that exist, for example, in the portal, that can be quite general. So they may contain reference to instance elements, for example, Stadium Arcadium album. And so the point is that in order to match competency questions to reusable content patterns, you need to abstract them. For example, you can move then the competency question from the instantiated aspect to their abstracted version. So when did a certain band record a certain album? Or which albums did a certain band record during a certain time period? So this kind of operations clearly refers to the current trend in, for example, translating automatically natural language questions into queries. Okay, and there is now here, this is partly open, there is a lot of work ongoing here. So matching a competency question to a content pattern requires to compare the local question to the questions covered by ACP in order to evaluate the content pattern for suitability for solving the problem. And automatic support, as I told you, is research, still research. And ongoing work on automatic support for the selection is starting from these local competency questions. So by using, for example, parsing of requirements and extraction of competency questions, formalization of them, and support, NLP-like support to match terminology of the competency questions to the lexicalizations of content patterns. And there are also some support being developed in the Neon Toolkit, but we are not, of course, the only ones to do that. There is also, for example, there is a researcher in my institute that has completed a PhD on that, and that is trying to use case-based reasoning for that. She's Eva Blomqvist from now with our lab, and ontology matching and so on. So next slide, 56. We have here a sample specialization, but I probably already introduced it, so when you take a pattern, try to specialize it to your task. We have here a sample composition that is 57. In the composition, the resulting ontology is composed of the union of the ontology elements and axioms from the two content patterns, plus this is not so just a union of two patterns, but also there should be some axioms like disjointness or equivalence that are added in order to link, to create a link really between the two content patterns. Next one, 58, we are going to conclude and move to Valentina. It's okay, where do these content patterns come from? So they come from experience of ontology engineers in modeling any kind of ontologies. And there are four ways typically of creating these content patterns, which can be summarized as follows. First one is typically is the golden ways of engineering. Okay, re-engineering from patterns expressed in other data models. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel, of course, because people is expressing in several ways their core knowledge in already in other format. So you can have, you know, data model patterns like in Hayes' work, or lexical frames like in FrameNet or VerbNet. We have workflow patterns, for example, in Founder Hour's work. We have patterns in knowledge discovery and so on and so far. And also we can, by the way, there are other ways of creating patterns. For example, specializing, generalizing, or composing other patterns, extracting them from reference ontologies by applying the cloning procedure, or creating them by extraction specialization and combining the previous techniques. So next slide, 59. Okay, all this activity of reusing competency questions, abstracting them, formalizing them, and putting them into in order to match possibly reusable content patterns is something that Valentina suggested to call extreme ontology design, inspired by the basic rules of extreme programming, like pair programming, being test oriented. So, for example, using competency questions encoded, formalized as unit tests, having a continued integration, and so on. The main principles are, okay, divide and conquer, so understand the task and express it by means of competency questions, reuse good solutions, like good practices, and evaluate the result against the task. In the next three slides, there is an example of the extreme design iteration for, in particular, that uses content patterns and not the other types. So given the time constraints, Peter, we are now we are going in half an hour. We want to leave some time for questions, and Valentina has still to present the portal. So I won't go into details on that. Probably you can look at by your own. The idea is similar to what we have seen before with the band, with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You have some sentence, you try to generalize over it to produce competency questions, to formalize them as queries. And the next slide, 61, you can see that I can then retrieve match these competency questions to content patterns. For example, you can take agent role, time index, person role, time interval, and so on. And then to specialize and compose them, creating specialized patterns like person play a role, or playing instrument on a tune, or playing on a tune in recording ear. And finally, you can populate an A box by reusing the individuals that existed in the source material, the source natural language material, and provide so material for creating the A box that allows to answer a unit test. In the next slide, 62, you can see how this unit test could look like if generalized in only one big Sparkle query, for example. So let's go now to 63. So we have made experiments with these techniques, and particularly with extreme design and reusing content patterns from a portal. We've made during several PhD courses and also seminars, workshops made around the world. And we have data that are going to be published on a deliverable of the new projects. And so during, for example, a four-day course for PhD students, most of them have never constructed ontology or a small example, and mostly taxonomies or lightweight ontologies. And most subjects were familiar with some modeling language, by the way, but only a few have tried out. So we provided background questionnaires and exercises for ontology design at the end of every day, and subjective feedback questionnaire after the exercise. The first 2 days, the subjects were given no patterns, and the second 2 days, they have given patterns. So some results here are based on subjective feedback questionnaires only, but we will have objective ones, and currently Valentina and Eva Blomqvist are scanning this material in order to, and then we'll describe them appropriately. So by the way, from the subjective feedback questionnaires, we've got that main difficulties were mapping from the problem to the patterns and producing pattern composition. So typically the tasks that are less supported currently by the tools and require real quantity processing in order to understand the abstraction and matching phases. Most found the patterns useful, and many perceive that they introduced some solution they did not think of themselves. So this is crucial. Okay. Most perceive the second exercise as the easiest to solve and the fourth as the most successfully modeled. This may mean that they can find an apparently a simple solution when having clear requirements but no solution. But then they, once exposed to actual good practices, they realize that the best models come out after they have been exposed to good practices. And the last day, surprise, surprise, we also got the nice pattern proposal from them. And this is a very good feedback, I think. So, ongoing official work before moving to Valentina's part. So we have made some, we have improved the portal, but Valentina will talk about that, and also we are providing an API for the portal to reuse these patterns. And ongoing and next phases will include building the plugin, and for the new toolkit, continue with experimentation, and try moving more on using case-based reasoning for pattern-based automatic ontological construction, which is the topic of the PhD thesis of Blomqvist. So, I also say join the ODB community, but I also leave the handset to Valentina. So thanks for listening.
Thank you, Eldo.
Okay, hello, it's Valentina now speaking. We will start my part with the slide number 65. So I will talk, 66 actually. Sorry. So I will present you the Ontology Design Patterns Initiative, and also I will take the occasion to talk about an extension that we developed for Semantic Media Wiki that might be useful also for other domains. By the way, we developed it on the base of requirements that we had within the portal for evaluating and certifying patents. So basically on the right top right of the slide you can see the main page the correct main page of the ontologydesignpatterns.org, and on the left bottom you can see the page on the MediaWiki website in the extension areas where you can download actually the first version we have released of the evaluation wiki flow that is the name of this extension. Next slide, 67. I take the occasion to tell you that I added some useful links to the page describing this talk on the Ontolog Wiki, so if you want you can find there additional links. Well, the ontologydesignpatterns.org was born under the NEON project, so basically it's on one end is a result of the project. On the other end, it is envisioned as an open initiative that probably will go to we want to have an open source project on this. So we are moving basically from a project work towards a real initiative. It's a semantic web portal, and it is meant to collect best practices, good practices of ontology design, and that's what we call ontology design patterns. So they are of different types, as I've already shown you, and so based on this classification, we have built this portal that aims at collecting these different types of pattern with different presentation and description. Currently, you can find a list of proposed content patterns, actually, this is what is the base ones the first ones that have been put there, and we plan to have a fast bootstrap phase in next 2 months. I will tell something about it. So basically, on the portal, these ontology design patterns can be shared, of course, so proposed and shared, evaluated, and there is also an area for training material about good practices. For example, currently you can find training materials about the course that we used to give to PhD students. And also a repository of reusable ontologies, which are basically the OWL files, because the OWL files of this content pattern. Next slide, 68. We have divided currently the portal, the website, into several areas, and we distinguish these areas by means of different namespace. We also have some management of access rights, but basically there are many places where most of the area of the wiki is open to users that just have an account, and to have an account is really simple. You can request it from the wiki directly. Basically, the community area is the area where all users can share experiences, collect also modeling issues. There is a link from the main page and to the main of the portal for posting new modeling issues. So basically the idea is that the community, people from the community can ask help to all the others about issues they encounter on a real case scenario. Then there is the proposal area where basically we are collecting proposals of patterns. Now you can find their proposed content patterns. Proposed content patterns can be just uploaded. It's very simple to propose a pattern. All you need is to have an OWL file that encodes the pattern, and you can easily upload it by an import form. This form is depicted on the slide on the right top, and you can just import it, and then the wiki will create automatically a page for the pattern. And also a page for each element defined locally in the pattern. You can also find from the proposal page, from the page where you can post the proposal, recommended guidelines for uploading the pattern. So we have, for example, an annotation schema, which is an OWL file that defines some annotation properties that are useful for describing, for annotating the content patterns, for documenting it. And this is quite important on one end for people who are going to reuse the pattern. On the other end, the wiki will recognize these annotations and will use the content in order to enrich the page. Another area is the area of reviews. We have two kinds of reviews, open reviews, so every user of the ODP community can click on the review link on a proposal page and put their its own review, and this is very useful both for the author of the pattern, the person who has proposed the pattern, and also for quality committee members who are in charge of making more formal reviews that are used for certification. So basically the second type is the quality committee review. So there are, based on the type of user the system recognizes and send you in the right place where you can put the review. There is a light procedure for doing review. We are going to, and is supported by the extension that I'm going to present in a few minutes. And well, then once the pattern has been certified by following this successfully this procedure, it is promoted to be part of the official catalog. And so basically what is guaranteed from this catalog is that the pattern has been reviewed at least from two experts from the field. It is completely documented with rationales and annotations, and so it's basically this is the difference between a proposal and a certified pattern. By the way, we expect that actually many proposals can be already used even before to be certified. The certification can be useful in the future for provenance aspects, for example. And then, okay, there is the area for training, as I said before, and then there is an area, very important area, from feedback. So we have basically also here two kinds of feedback. This has been done just for ACE, the procedure for maintaining the portal. So we have feedback from users, so every user can put their feedback. There is a link from the main page. And there is the development task part where basically only the editorial board members and the developers, it's like the place where we maintain the priority tasks, but basically these tasks are also defined based on the feedback from the users. So the editorial board members also are in charge to monitor the feedback and basically describe them as tasks for the developers. Next slide, 69, you can see just a summary of the kind of user we have and what they can do. So this is a very simple diagram that some way summarizes what I just said. Actually, I have to mention that I noticed a couple of mistakes here, so I'm sorry about that, but nothing really crucial. Basically, these are more or less all the activity that a user can perform on the pattern. I will go ahead because I already described these activities. Next slide, 70. Well, each content pattern, now we move to the representation and description of the patterns. At the moment, we have only content pattern, but we are working for presentation of other types of pattern, but now you can find only this type for, let's say, at least 1 month. And, okay, as we are using a semantic wiki, basically we are using a semantic media wiki with also semantic fonts and other extensions, and also we have developed some extension for specific purposes. We have a semantic representation of the description of the pattern. All the patterns are annotated with semantic relation. Each pattern is on the right side of the slide. You can see a screenshot of one of the pages of a pattern in particular. This is the situation pattern. As you can see, the pattern is described in its UML diagram. Currently, now we are moving to have an automatic generator of diagrams that we will use a visualization based on graph. Actually, this is something that also has been built within Neon, the ontology visualization tool, and is going to be a service that we can reuse. So basically, once you propose a pattern by uploading the alt file of the pattern, you will also have automatically the picture with this graph-based notation. Then on the, okay, just right above the diagram, you can see that there is a box that is related to the evaluation, and we will see it in the next slide. below the diagram, you can find on the right side the annotations. They basically are the field that the properties that describe the pattern. For example, the user that submitted it, the name of the pattern, which is important because patterns can really give designer a vocabulary for discussing about modeling, as this happens, for example, in software engineering. Then there is the description of the intent. There are domains, for example, and also it's important to mention that within the portal, once you add the domain, you can describe the domain. So basically, we are collecting also shared domains. So when you want to attach a domain to your pattern, you can see easily by the auto-completion facility if it's already there. Then you can relate some competence examples or some sample competency questions that are associated to the pattern, some known use, for example, if this pattern has been already used in other ontologies, the consequences in relation with other patterns and ontologies, and of course the link to the all file that you can download. Then on the left side, besides the annotation, there is the list of the elements of the pattern, classes and properties, so with their description. Each of these is associated to a page. And then there is the review part. On the bottom side, there is the list of reviews. Before there is the list of scenarios, there are examples that can be also associated to all files describing scenarios that are instantiation of the pattern, so usage, that are good for having some example of how it can be used. And then the list of reviews that are already available for the pattern. Next slide, 71. Well, in order to support the evaluation workflow in our portal, and then we realized that actually this can be useful in many cases with wikis. So in general, if you want to evaluate a wiki page, and in our case a wiki page in the website corresponds to the description of a pattern, if you want to evaluate, you can use the simple extension that asks you to install Semantic Media Wiki and Semantic Forms, and that basically add to the pages, to the articles of the wiki. Let's talk in terms of ontologies and patterns. So it adds an evaluation tab to all the proposals of patterns in the wiki. So you can see on the right top of the slide the page in the MediaWiki site where you can download it. Probably I forget to add the link to the extension page. I will do it as soon as I finish the session. And then the other picture depicts how the evaluation tab looks like. Basically, you have four possible actions that you can do. And you have two kinds of features that come with the extension, one related to the configuration, one to the functionality that the user then can benefit of. Next slide, 72. The configuration of Wikiflow allows you to declare which are the categories into the wiki that you want to evaluate. For example, we have the evaluation Wikiflow activate for proposed content pattern category. So each page of proposals in the website has the evaluation tab. Then you can customize the review schema. So, for example, we now have a very light and general purpose review schema for the pattern. In our case, we are going to structure a bit the pattern based on the characteristics that the pattern should show in order to be certified and evaluated. So, basically, the review schema can in some way represent an evaluation set of criteria. So it can be different, it is possible to define different schemas for different categories and associate them each other. Then there are new user rights, that are related to the evaluation action. So they, in principle, they can be all performed. They can be performed from, by all users, but you can configure based on your local needs if there is a difference between groups for assigning these rights with regard to the actions. For example, in our case, reviews of quality committee reviews can be done only by quality committee members, while every user can request review for the pattern. So next slide, 73, you can see the list of rights that you can set and associated with the action that you can do with the evaluation weekly flow. You can ask for a review, so basically this is the list of the action that you can do and what they produce. Basically, the first action is that, for example, in the case of ontology design patterns, you submit your proposal and then you want to ask for a review. When you ask for the review, the proposal then becomes of categories of category waiting for review. Once the review is assigned to some reviewer, it changes and then it's assigned the review category. And when the review is submitted from an official reviewer, then the category waiting for review is removed and the assigned review is put there. There is the last action that is certify that makes basically to create a new page for the pattern that is then edited in our case, for example, from the editors of the website for adjusting just formal aspects. And so basically the pattern starts to have two different life cycles. One is the one in the official catalog, the other one is some way freezed kept there for history reasons. Another very interesting features is the fact that that basically all this argumentation in some way, so basically the review procedure is stored based on in terms of semantic relations. So the aim is to collect this information in a way that can be some way analyzed in order to extract rationales, observe some common behavior, and basically also to extract good practice from the rationales for evaluation. Next slide, 74. As I said, okay, the link is here on the slide, so you can download this first version. We will have a new version. I don't know actually the release date, we didn't fix it yet, but I think quite soon, I would say before the summer, where we will fix in particular the rationale capture and some other aspects. Next slide, 75, it's the last one. I can summarize that I said something about the Ontology Design Patterns.org initiative and the Evaluation Wikiflow extension, that is an extension for Semantic Media Wiki and Semantic Forms. The Ontology Design Pattern.org ongoing plan network includes we want to add the new types of ontology design patterns, and we have a concrete action for this. Basically, we are going to have the first face-to-face editorial meeting, editorial board meeting in Rome on February 23rd, and we will have editors that will be responsible for different areas and in charge of bootstrapping the content, as well as investigating and define templates for describing the different types of patterns. We will set up a mailing list for open to the community, so basically you will be invited to join and to give your contribution. We are also developing a search service based on Watson that will be included in the website, and we are also developing the repository APIs in order to make this patent reusable also from other applications, and they will be basically ready in a few months. We have actually a deadline for this, so I'm quite sure that before the summer they will be there. And also we are working to a specific call at the FX for services, or looking at some other existing one, or extend, in principle probably we will extend the export facility of Semantic Media Wiki. And we will also include an open rating system for the open reviews based on an open rating system model that has been developed within Neon. And also we are going to monitor the downloads and try to have some user-based evaluation based on the downloads and the comments. So we are going to monitor actually what happened in order to improve as possible, as much as possible, the portal. Well, I think I can finish. In the next two slides we'll find some references. They are not comprehensive, of course, but it's a starting point. I think we can stop here and start the discussion. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Valentina. We now come to the segment for questions and answers and for some open remarks by people who are participating. At one point we had over 30 people on the call, although I only noticed that 18 are on the chat board. So if you have questions and you're not quite on the chat room yet, go to the session page, and under archives there's a chat link. Click on that and enter the chat room. We can start queuing people up for questions. At the lower right corner there's a hand button right under all the list of names of people in the chat room. So if you have a question, this is a good time to click on that button, and we could line people up. For those people who are still recognized as anonymous, it would be great if you click on the settings button in the top center of the chat room and change anonymous to your name so that we can recognize you. Again, I request that people who would want to make a remark or have a question to click on the hand button. I see one hand now from Ken Bukowski. So you need to unmute yourself and test your voice first. So unmute is *3 on your phone keypad. And after you make your remarks, you probably want to mute your phone again with a *2. So let's start with Ken. Go ahead, Ken.
Hi, Peter.
Yes, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a question. I noticed in the talk there was a mention of morphisms in composition, and I was just wondering if the intention of that is that the composition would be the co-limit, and if you thought at all about that kind of categorical framework for ontology development.
I assume this question is for Aldo?
Aldo, yes.
Okay, sorry, I had to unmute my hand. So, can I rephrase the question, Ken? You're saying that since we are proposing to use composition there, we can... I didn't understand if you say that a possibility would be to have a categorical framework, category theory framework for patterned usage, or if you're saying that we are proposing that.
I'm wondering if you thought about that as being the basis for what you're doing. Because it seems like a natural fit to use...
Yeah, indeed. So that was also the approach by Peter Clark after proposing it initially, then for his for the KR paper they did on the topic in 2000. They also eventually went out proposing a category theory approach. What should I say is that, frankly, although I'm very fascinated by this this possibility, I'm not really an expert of that. On the other hand, the current idea is to have them actually populated. So let's find out what are these. Let's take some pattern recognition in our community and describe what these practices are, and let's discuss them if they are really good practices or can have some problems or issues there. In the meantime, of course, more sophisticated ways of managing them, composing them, applying them by analogy, for example, which was even recently, because I organized a conference in Sicily this last year and invited, it was the ECO, Knowledge Engineering Conference, and I invited Peter Clark as an invited speaker, and he re-proposed actually this idea of having an analogical reasoning approach on reusing patterns. I second this idea. The only point is that currently we want to, firstly, to disseminate these practices in the actual OWL practice for non-experts, especially for, so either for educational purposes or for even nicer or more friendly tools that can ensure that you are producing an ontology that is at least partly smart enough, well-founded, or whatever. So, of course, this is a very good suggestion, and but even, for example, even Peter, that is still working in with knowledge patterns in at Boeing, is in the real practice, doesn't actually implement any component that uses category theory approach there. So I think there is room for really producing something interesting here, but there is not yet any proof that this can be really exploited in these terms. Hope this answers your question, Ken.
It gives me a feeling about it. I've done some work in this area, but more in the context of UML rather than in OWL or semantic web. The idea is that morphisms and colimits can be a useful tool for theory management.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're building large theories out of many components,
mm-hmm.
There's the issue of how the different components are supposed to overlap. You know, I mean, what do they have in common? You have to make clear about what they have in common and how they share the their common framework.
Yeah.
And that it turns out that CoLimit is ideally suited for that. You don't have to expose this to the end user, by the way. I mean, if you have this is just more like the underlying,
categorical ghost in the machine.
But, you know, the end user doesn't have to be aware that this is happening. But it turns out it seems like a very useful way to approach this. When you're developing ontologies, particularly as you get to larger and larger ontologies.
I would like to go into this work you're mentioning. So because a lot of stuff has been done in the area of databases, of conceptual modeling. So, for example, we presented this work in October in Entity Relationship Conference. And also there we discovered even new areas of overlapping that we didn't notice before. So anyway, if you want to send us some links from the work you have described, this is really interesting for us.
Yeah, I'll...
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Ken. Next in line is Gary Burke-Cross. Gary? Go ahead. Star 3, unmute, test your voice, and introduce yourself first. I should have asked for that. Gary, you are probably on mute. Maybe on your own phone as well.
By the way, Gary has written a question on the chat.
Right. Gary.
He doesn't. I can read it aloud.
Yes, please.
Say, it would seem that ontologies and patterns are assembled out of some standard parts. Is there a commitment to a foundational ontology such as Dolce? Valentina, I think she has already answered that partly. Indeed, there is not a commitment to that. So Dolce actually was a very nice use case because from the very beginning, so I'm one of the designers of Dolce since 2002, and the idea is just that of putting together a lot of good practices in that obey to very general, requirements. But the problem actually with Dolce was that it was too dense in a sense, although we have made effort in making lighter versions of it, the problem of Dolce is that it contains too many solutions all together with the term interdependent. So especially for lightweight projects, it's a bit too much to have just such a big composition of patterns there. And that's why we decided at first to try to extract some patterns from Dolce. Of course, there is no commitment on using Dolce as an overarching ontology to control all the possible content patterns that can be derived. No, there is nothing like that, of course. Of course, that you can assemble out of some standard parts, but even saying standard there, come on, you can have alternative patterns for addressing a certain modeling issue. So you may want to accept the fact that there exist different or even conflicting patterns there, and this is life, I think. We should be supported. And describing the possible commonalities or conflicts is really a source of richness for the semantic web, I think.
Okay, I hope that, Gary, you're happy with that.
Yes, I was, I guess I was muted. I was speaking, repeating the question. I just wonder, in addition to what was said, if a person was starting from very different foundations, say a person was familiar with psych and was using some of those terms, it seems like we might have an issue here because we have patterns with terms in our basic concepts that might differ between them. I'm just wondering about that as an issue.
Yes. Okay, what I think here is that one possibility, for example, we made some work in the Wonder Web project together with people from Trento, Nicola Guarino, Claudio Masolo, and in 2003 and 2004. And what I think we did is try to compare different foundational ontologies. There we had a take at Dolce, BFO, and also another ontology that was made by Duke Schneider, another foundational ontology. And interestingly enough, the task of trying to compare the different foundation ontologies was really, really challenging. And eventually, we discovered that the best way to compare them was to analyze the individual fragments, certain fragments that address certain specific issues. So I think that trying to compare these large foundation ontologies on the side of the actual solutions, so what type of Dolce supports, you know, the distinction between events and objects and creates a participation relation between them, and you know, in Dolce it is translated, for example, as a binary, but actually the original has a time index, so we are going to possibly encode it in our to preserve the overall expressivity in by using the N relation pattern. And on the other hand, what happens in BFO or psych or on that ground, you can really compare what they mean and what they want to support as a modeling solution, for example, to express participation. And this is a practicable way, actually, to compare things. If you try to compare entire large ontologies, this is really, really tough. And the only way to do that it currently is, for example, to have this bulk ontology matching initiatives that try to match the most proper, you know, individual classes or relations that can be matched.
Did you find in your actual work with the students that they created ontologies with different terms and different relationships? Or did they all use a common foundation?
No, I found one interesting thing, maybe it's something that I've not had the time to really explain, but what we also found out is that people is really willing to use patterns that are really as molds, so something that then you can change their skin, in a sense, so that you can change terminology or whatever, but preserving the axiomatic structures that they had, so customizing them to the task they have. So although we encourage to create ontologies that preserve the import or at least some URI reference to the elements that have been, for example, spiralized from reusable patterns, we have nothing against you just removing that import. And so say, for example, so there are several, you can just use patterns and produce a new ontology, then you throw away the patterns and you have an ontology that has, the good practices, but your own terminology that is bound to your domain. But ideally, the best would be to reuse this know-how. So, for example, to have an explicit reference to this, to the reused patterns, and possibly because they can be then reused analogously in different domains, or even publish your own skin of that pattern or your own use of that pattern on the portal, and then providing domain-oriented or task-oriented patterns that can be used in that particular area. Yeah, for example, Valentina is just telling me, I forgot, that the plugin we are building for the Neon Toolkit will support just that. So we'll be able to make this signature morphism in the sense of Peter Clark's. So you take a pattern, then you change the scheme, the signature, and then you put it into the ontology.
Does that answer your question adequately, Gary?
Gary is again lost.
Yeah, yes. I
did. Thank you very much.
Ah, okay.
Takes me a while to get to star three.
I noticed, Eldel, you have your hand up also. Do you have a remark to make? And I also noticed that Amanda and Doug are both typing, so they may have questions. Yeah. All right. Amanda's hand is up. Amanda, so go ahead. Star three. We can't hear you yet. Maybe your own phone is on mute. Star 3 on your keypad to unmute. And then make sure your own phone or your own phone system is not being muted.
Maybe Amanda can try to write it on the chat.
Yes, yeah. Amanda, maybe we still can't hear you. Maybe you can type it out.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now. Go ahead. Yes.
There we go. Sorry, having a little technical difficulty between my headset and my phone. So this is it's more of a comment than a question, except for that it's sort of open-ended, and I'd like to hear, bounce it off of you and hear any feedback you might have. What's striking me about the ontology design patterns is the potential to accomplish something that I've seen attempted and attempted myself in a number of ways with mixed success, and that is to enable either more junior ontologists or subject matter experts to perform modeling. And, of course, on its own, it's not going to do this, right? But I am working in...
Amanda's lost again.
We lost you, Amanda, somehow.
Maybe in the meantime, I can start
yes.
answering the
yeah,
first part.
Answer the first part of the question, if you please.
Yeah, actually, she didn't make a specific question, but she said she got cut off of call. Okay. By the way, I'll try to just comment on what she said. So possibly she wanted to tell about the possibility of really, yeah, she's going to type it. She was trying to tell something about the possibility of really you having, subject matter experts or junior designers to use these practices. So, come on, this is very, very interesting area, and there's not much that has been done. For example, in the Wonderware project, we tried many years ago, actually, 2003, to use this kind of question-answering interaction with experts, trying to maieutic way of building the right ontology based on questions, but it's quite boring. And currently there are initiatives on simplifying interfaces. There is even a plugin for Protege 4 that works for that, made by is an English. I don't remember exactly the name of the institutions that did it, but it's quite interesting. By the way, I think that having a possibility of describing the full, or at least a good amount of the range of design solutions, it's a good way. Maybe it could be a gold lane in order to arrive to the best interface model, the best interaction model that we need for special users or even naive ones. So while if you try to, like in the, in the problem of mapping overall ontologies, so trying to have the simplest interface or the simplest interaction for all design altogether doesn't make much sense, because you can have very different aspects there. So I think that anyway, trying to factorize the effort of devising design solutions, support for design of ontologies should allow a better way of envisaging the possible solutions for them. There is a new question by Doug Holmes. Peter is writing it.
Yes, Doug, do you want to call it out? Do you want to speak up on it, or would you like...
Yeah, I can try to speak up. So Doug Holmes says there are a number of different analytic positions in ontology engineering, for example, 3D versus 4D. Do you expect to, or do you think it's necessary to situate particular patterns within a position? That is not something like, this pattern is appropriate in a 4D ontology. Yeah, definitely yes. I think Doug's suggestion is, especially when we have this kind of, quite philosophical talk on the alternative ontologies, I think that this definitely can be an advantage. So, although, you know, the debate between 3Ds, 3D and 4D supporters is quite not completely, you know, clarified. And, for example, there are intermediate positions. For example, if you take a pattern like the participation pattern in Dolce that commits on objects, events, and relational participation between the two, this in principle should be 3D because distinguishes objects and events. On the other hand, you can build some 4D view in imagining a kind of time index participation, and then you have a class of things that are actually situations that involve in their settings involve you know, agents or objects and events, and then you are kind of describing or finding some verified solutions for the object there. So that there are sometimes, when you go to real modeling issues, sometimes there are more interesting cases for debate than just trying to find the best philosophical position in terms of 3D versus 4D. Nonetheless, I think, yeah, mentioning this kind of aspects in the user pattern is definitely relevant. So thanks, Doug, for noticing. Yeah, consider, come on, yeah, sorry. There is another question by Gary Burcross. He asks, has any work been done in geospatial patterns? One thing that is, you know, made with respect to this is we are not submitting to you some, you know, closed set of solutions or, you know, we are the ones that are building the patterns for the future or whatever. So we have put some, of course, and we have some ideas on how to model things because we have some experience in ontology design. By the way, the core of this of the description of the tools and the things that we have described in the talk is to invite people just to provide their own solutions and the possibility to discuss or even review the ones that are there and so starting real threads on the pros and cons that are there. So this is, in general, I repeat once more about this thing. Concerning that, I think, yeah, geospatial patterns, of course, there are there are theories concerning special representation, spatial representation theories that can be assumed as patterns. RCC, for example, is and in all these varieties coming from RCC 1, 2, 2, 3, 4, etc., is something that can be definitely encoded though. As patterns, and indeed there is at least one group of researchers in Switzerland that has made the attempt to represent them in OWL, and so giving these special representation patterns to the community of the semantic web. So yes, I should say yes, but of course there is much more than RCC. There is a lot of work going out there. The other point is that if we have all these patterns, all these possible potential patterns in so many different languages, and sometimes described in natural language, sometimes described in first-order logic, monologue, so all these things, of course, are great, are treasures, but these treasures can be maybe given, ported to the mass and to the mass of designers on the semantic web, even better if we accept to try to at least to attempt a translation of them, even by using engineering patterns and typical logical patterns into OWL, for example, which is typically a language that can be used for interoperability of between different conceptual of models.
Thank you, Eldo. We're quickly running out of time. I can see that Amanda has typed out her remark, which I will read, and then I have Valentina's hand up, and I would then go to her and then go back to Eldo to do a wrap-up and then end the session.
Okay.
So let me
give the answer to Valentina about that.
Yeah, let me read Amanda's remark first. He said, as an idea, given collaboration tools that hide the ontological guts for example, like top braid ensemble, there is still great difficulty in enabling subject matter experts or even junior ontologists to model real practice-grounded concepts and relationships. I'm seeing the ontology design pattern approach as having great potentials to help here. In my work context, we have a team of mixed seniority ontologists needing means of methodological synchronization and teams of subject matter experts whose contextualized ontologies need to be built without their needing to become ontologists. I see a shared ODP library as of great potential use at both levels. So kudos to your work, Aldo and Valentina. Amanda also says, I'm particularly interested because I've tried to approach this in terms of ontology templates or similar frames of my own making with at best mixed success. I think ODP may provide some of the missing intuitions. And it's not easy to implement use via existing tools, but with momentum, there's no technical barrier to it, I think. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree.
So, Valentina, are you online? Go ahead with your remark.
Yes, I'm online. Can you hear me?
No, I mean, almost...
Can you hear me?
Yes, perfect now. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, no, I wanted to remark just on Amanda's remarks, actually. I wanted to confirm that we actually have the perception now, and also we start having the first results from some experiments we are conducting, that actually patterns are useful on both junior ontologists or people who want to start doing ontology even without going, for example, into details of logical aspects and issues. And particularly, I think they are really useful in order to create a communication with students, so they are useful also as a teaching tool. On the other hand, if you know the pattern, so you are also a more expert user, then they are really useful both from the, you know, in order to give you a vocabulary for describing what are your modeling choices, and also for fastening your words, for make your words faster. Also another, just another remark about something that she mentioned about methodologies. We are also building up in a bottom-up way, basically, a methodology based on pattern. It's not right really a methodology, but a method, let's say, and the guidelines for doing this pattern-based design in a collaborative way. So we are going also to experiment on this and to experiment how pairs interact and can integrate parts of the ontology they already have designed. So I think that actually this can be really useful in small companies and other than research, as well as in research and academic context. And I think that also tool support will be key for making it more explicit, more clear, and in evidence. We are, by the way, working on some supporting tool, but we expect and we hope that also others will join our effort and maybe put some effort in place for having a very nice tool supporting patterns.
Okay. Thank you, Valentina. So back to Aldo for a final wrap-up remark.
As a wrap-up, I would simply say, please join the initiative, because the more we are, the more we can actually start the community acting in the right way. and acting by, and devising and discussing what are the best practices, and this can also and also possibly starting collaborations together to and put together components. As I was saying, in the chat, there are no technical barriers, I think, in general, for providing good tools for everyone that implement good practices. The only thing is actually knowing these good practices. In many cases, several cases, past tools have been implemented by people that do not are really competent of real design in ontologies, but they simply assumed that the good metaphor for interfaces and interaction, for example, was based on the logical data model of the ontologies, which is not the case. Sometimes what is really important is to have interaction and interface is close to the way people conceptualize things and not necessarily how or a description logic or FS model logic is organized. So, again, if you are interested in this kind of solutions, in these invariances emerging out of design practices, join the portal, add proposed patterns, proposed improvements to the portal. If you are an expert of a particular area, either a domain, for example, or a particular area, so we have, for example, now experts for process patterns that are joining, and someone for mapping patterns, correspondence patterns, and also other areas, the list of people there, and also people expert in, for example, in producing support for processing ontologies based on good practices. There is a work being done, for example, in Manchester, especially by Luigi Annone, together with Alan Rector, and this is very interesting, like the OPL, the processing language for ontologies. Yeah, okay, but it didn't say me that they are joining the initiative as well. And so all these things will, there are many ways of contributing to this effort, and I think that this can really, at a certain point, arrive to an effect close to what I have in mind is something like Apache. They're producing solutions, producing components that can be reused by everyone on an open source basis. So let's think about an open source for basis and real collaboration on the side of reusable content, reusable logic solutions, reusable solutions for changing logic, porting content from one language to another, and so on. I think this is really the best wrap-up that I can do of that.
Yes, absolutely, Aldo. And on that note, let me thank both you and Valentina for a very comprehensive presentation. I think the work that you're doing is phenomenal and very badly needed for the community like ours. And I'm sure a lot of us will be getting into your portal and to join in the work. So thank you once again, and let me also thank all the participants for joining us today. It has been a very extensive session, but well worth the time. Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you, Peter, for organizing very, very precise and timely way this kind of talks of calls.
Thank you, Aldo. Thank you, Valentina, and thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Okay. See you. Ciao.